So we will start the Board of Supervisors meeting, call the meeting to order. We'll cite the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Announce the posting of the Open Meetings Act on the east wall. Tenants by observation: Jurgens, Hill, Bauman, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. Consent agenda. General agenda, number two, approve the minutes of the meeting held March 18, 2015. Approve all claims through April 1st, 2015. In the amount of $987,802.11. Accept claim listed separately under regular agenda. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve canceling check number 150300045 to Kansas Department of Revenue in the amount of $20. Approve permit number 1012 for the Beatrice BPW to bore under road and for 324 feet southeast in West Ditch for 6-inch water main service for Koch Nitrogen located in the northwest fourth of Section 14 T-4NR-5E, Blakely Township.
I would move to approve consent agenda.
Second.
Motion by Byers, second by Bauman. Just a little bit there on the claims. A good share of that was for budget transfers. We transferred $500,000 into the insurance fund, $50,000 into the building funds, and that was for operation of those funds. And then the economic development fund, we transferred in $60,992.98. Any other comments? If not, vote. Vote 7-0. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Anybody here? We will do the Veterans Honor here a little bit later, but otherwise, comments from the public? Seeing none. Approve or disapprove claim number 150400028 to Gage County Sheriff Petty Cash Account in the amount of $39.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion to approve by Bauman, second by Lytle. And you want to talk on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I wanted to bring this to light, just discuss this. This is a payment issue with, is this Bosselman? Is this correct? And when we have deputies that go out west and the manner in which we purchase fuel out there, they do not seem to care the fact that we do business every 2 weeks. And so this is a late fee, if you will. And so that's why we're on the hook for this. And we've contacted them a couple times and said, listen, we're going to pay it. Our business operations are different. So I wanted to bring that to light, and if Gus wants to say anything about that.
And this has happened before. This is a regular thing, unfortunately, and I'll give my opinion here in a minute.
Yes, it happened before, and so a lot of this started when we lost the credit cards, and I only went with three, and just three supervisors have that. And it works pretty well until they're gone to, like, this training at 4 months at a time. And so there's one station they go by close to Academy, and it was Bosselman's, and they have a card. And so that'd be good. We just get that card and put in each car for gas only. And we kept having these problems, and Don and I know I've called several times. I think Don has, and I said, listen, we're done with this. We're just not going to do it anymore. So I pulled the cards. Apparently, one was overlooked in the car that we surplus in the back there. We used just for school. And a new deputy went out and was told the sergeant he didn't realize that they couldn't use that, and used it, I think, one time, which was in February, I think it was. And so I contacted him and told him to use it anymore. He's kind of his own on that now. And we pulled that card in. So that's why this one happened. Otherwise, I haven't been doing business with them for a while because they just don't understand our pay process and how long it takes. And they, I think, dismissed one initially up front, and I said that's just not going to cut it. So hopefully this problem will go away once we get this resolved here with new cards in September. I might ask for just a few more, and then this won't be an issue probably. So that's how it transpired.
Good. It's $39.
I totally approve of what Gus is doing. I think he's doing the right thing. We're trying to do business with people with our local merchants and with those people in the area as much as we can. And if they don't want to appreciate what we're doing, then goodbye.
Like a $239, that's a tank of gas for us. So they just lost the business.
Any more discussion? Vote 7-0. Committee reports, building and grounds.
Nothing new. Still waiting on our blue lights and whether we can get something to work. And
so you haven't heard from him or whatever?
No.
No, I haven't heard. I don't see Dave here either this
morning. He was working on it. They cleaned all the lights out. He finished that up yesterday, him and Rosie, and they've got the blue ready to put on the lights. They're going to wait until tonight's weather is done. And I would suspect after this storm goes through, at least JT indicated tomorrow we would have blue lights.
We'd have a blue courthouse. So,
well, good. You know more about blue lights than I do.
I just happened to be walking by him as he was cleaning off the lights yesterday.
That's all we have right now.
Oh, she has another
blue lights. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you want
to? I don't know, but that's up to you.
Are you Katie Lang?
I'm Katie.
Yeah, and I think you're on you're going to another meeting.
I got another meeting at 11 at Dare County.
At 11, so
just throw her in there.
So we
got 9 minutes.
Let her go.
Time to vent at 9.
We got the vendors honors at 9. We'll interrupt the committee reports if you'd like to come up and give your report so that you can don't hold you up for your next meeting.
This is just information about a grant that I am working on, and so I just wanted to get the word out about what we're doing. It's a 3-year federally funded grant called Saving Rural Hearts. The goal of the grant is to improve survival rates for sudden cardiac arrest by increasing the number, the amount of bystander CPR and AED use. So we have a number of action steps that we are going to take. I did locate 192 AEDs in our 5-county area. I know there are more out there, so basically we'll just be working over the next 3 years to continue to find those and to work with those people that we identified to make sure that they're doing the proper maintenance of the AEDs, keeping them in a ready-to-use state and that kind of thing, that they also have an emergency action plan so that if somebody does have an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, that people know how to use an AED and do CPR. So the AED registry it's a green document. We'll continue to work on that over the next 3 years and after that as well. We will be placing 63 new AEDs over the next 3 years. There's an application process. I'm working with the 5 county emergency managers to kind of come up with where there are gaps in placement. We're doing GIS mapping based on where we have the located ones now, and John Key from Jefferson County is doing that for us. So we are going to plan a meeting in April to kind of decide where the gaps are and then work on placement. We'll be doing a lot of education with the public about the signs and symptoms of sudden cardiac arrest, how to do CPR, and how to use an AED. There needs to be a lot more information and signage because a lot of people don't have any idea if there's an AED in their building. And one of the things about the AED registry is that we'll be sharing that information with law enforcement so that if they get an emergency call, they can say the AED at your location is such and such. So that if they don't know where the AED is in that location, once they call EMS, then they'll know. We're going to work with dispatchers regarding a dispatch-assisted CPR. I know they have protocols in place. Each county is a little bit different. So I'll be spending some time sitting with some dispatchers and kind of just seeing what their process is and making sure that we have a good system in place for that. And then eNarcis, we're going to work with EMS to make sure that in that electronic system, they document whether or not there was bystander intervention. That's right on the form now. We just don't have so robust reporting of whether or not that was done or not. So we'll be working with EMS on that. These numbers about locations are kind of old, but that's what I have. Out of the 36 in Fillmore County, at that point, 34 were public access. So that first number are the number that are public access. The second number are those that are located in places like YRTC in Geneva, so the Youth Rehab Treatment Center. So there's some that are in, like, NEAPCO and like BSDC, where they're not really public access. But we still wanted to know where those were so we could make sure that those places have an emergency action plan and that they know, you know, to make sure that those are all ready to go. Just a little bit of information about sudden cardiac arrest. It's basically a problem with the heart rhythm. It's different than a heart attack, although a heart attack can cause sudden cardiac arrest. When an adult or teen suddenly collapses, is unresponsive, and not breathing normally, you can assume that that is a sudden cardiac arrest, and then that would be when you'd immediately call 911 and start CPR. We are going to be doing a lot of teaching with hands-only CPR so that folks don't have to be freaked out about doing mouth-to-mouth. We'll go over with them about the Good Samaritan laws and all kinds of stuff about, you know, how to approach that. So our three steps on my business cards, I have check, call, compress. Those are the steps we have on the back of the card just so that people will remember. If you see an adult or teen who suddenly collapses, is unresponsive and not breathing normally, these are the steps that you follow. So you would check yourself to make sure that you're kind of get yourself composed and ready to go. Check the scene, make sure that it's safe. If the person's sitting up, you need to move them somewhere flat and hard. And then check level of consciousness, tap and shout, and then check to make sure that breathing is normally. We will do a lot of instruction in the classes about breathing normally, because sometimes people say, well, they're snoring or they're gasping. That's not normal. So if you see that, don't spend a lot of more time watching them breathe. That's not normal, so just proceed to the next step. So then you'd call for 911, and then, or have someone else call for 911, send somebody from the AED. And the other thing about the AEDs, all AEDs essentially will shock a VTAC or a VFib. That's all they're going to shock. So it's not going to accidentally shock somebody. So that's important for people to know. It's also important for them to know to follow the instructions. And I just got certified by American Red Cross and American Heart last week to be an instructor. And during my American Red Cross instruction, I just kept wanting to go faster than what the AED was going, because it was just like, I was like, come on, come on. But they tell you step by step by step what to do. So the first step with an AED is just to turn it on. And it will tell you everything else that you need to do. Compressions, right now the recommendation is at least 100 per minute. The sweet spot is between 100 and 120, at least 2 inches deep. And American Heart's going to come out with new recommendations or whatever they think for 2015 this fall. So we'll see whether or not anything really changes with that. But it's all based on resuscitation science that they do. And outcomes with out-of-hospital sudden cardiac arrest and what the better outcomes are. So options for learning CPR, we're going to do formal CPR classes. I've contacted Carol Fielder at Beatrice at the hospital. She has 37 instructors under her, and I have 35, well, now myself added to all those counties, so 36 from all the other counties. So we'll have quite a number of instructors that have agreed to assist with teaching classes. We will do friends and family CPR, which we'll use for large groups, which is something that you buy from American Heart. And basically, we would just facilitate. You just need a facilitator, and then people basically watch a video and then practice on little dummies. And then there's 30-minute citizen CPR from American Red Cross that we'll be using as well. We will be working with schools. We'll be working with hospitals. We'll be partnering with businesses. We'll be partnering with churches. So I already have a number of classes scheduled in Crete with some diabetes education classes, because that puts them at a greater risk for heart disease and for sudden cardiac arrest. So we're getting things going. It's a three-year grant. Just wanted to kind of let you know what's going to be going on. We'll be doing it in all five counties. I have one rescue unit here in Gage County that's already applied for an AED because their AED, they can't get it to work. So for now, since I really don't have, we'll meet with EMs in April to get that application process cemented together. I've already got the application ready to go, but we have to just kind of get some agreement on how we're going to work that. From now, I'm going to see if I can get one from somebody who's not really using theirs. Thayer County has an extra one on their equipment truck in Hebron. They're going to talk about tonight whether or not they will let us borrow it and let Pickrell have it until we can get them a new one through the grant. So, and I've done the same thing at Meridian School. I borrowed one from another place and let them use it. So Any questions about the program? I'm really excited.
When will, or you will be contacting some agencies to apply for the grant, or how do they?
We'll be doing is based on what the EMs say and where we find that there are gaps in coverage, then we will go to, say, Liberty and say, you guys don't have an AED anywhere in your community. Would it be appropriate for you to have one in your community? Because you need to have those where there are a lot of people gathering together on a fairly frequent basis. Otherwise, it's kind of like it sits there and it doesn't use it. Nobody checks on it. So there are certain criteria that we will look at and decide, you know, if you don't have one, do you need one? Are you willing to do what we want you to do to keep that? Because you're going to have one person certified in BLS, basic life support. You're going to have an emergency action plan, which we will work with them to make. You're going to have to agree to keep that AED and ready to use, which means that you're eventually going to have to replace batteries and pads. And there's an expense with that. So they'll have to sign an MOU with us. So, but we're excited. I'm totally switching my area of focus because I used to be disease surveillance and immunizations and case management. So it's kind of like I've been really busy trying to get up to speed and get trained. So I am now an instructor for American Red Cross and American Heart. So, and since I missed last time, I brought you guys some donuts because I didn't show up last time.
Oh,
I did bring you some.
You did.
I have to share. I didn't realize you guys had such a big board. I'm used to going and having two or three people in a room. Wow.
That was very bright, Kate. You always learn to give it to Don, not to someone else.
She says, yeah, they said you just have to bring donuts.
To help.
Well, thank you much.
Thank you so much.
Any more questions for Kate or?
No, just want to thank her very much. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you for showing up. We have a time event on the agenda, the Veterans Honor at 9 o'clock. And I think first, Matt has some comments about the program.
We've been at this for 2 years now, honoring our veterans in Gage County, and I think it's something good the board decided to do several years ago. And I'd like to go through and read the names of those veterans that we've honored starting back in April 17th of 2013. Don McPherson. And I will do, we have several, handful of these folks, rather, who have now passed away. In May 15 of 2013, Milton Husa, and he is now deceased. June 26 of 2013, Everett McAtee, he is deceased. 7-10 of 2013, Herman Andreessen. 8-7-2013, Lyle Johnson, he is deceased. September 4th, 2013, Frank Tim, Jr. October 2nd, 2013, Arnold Mainz. He is now deceased. November the 13th, 2013, Harley Jackson. December 11th, 2013, Levi Dodge. January 22nd, 2014, John Menzel. February 19th, 2014, George Lampe. March 5th, 2014, Marvin Pabin. April 2nd, 2014, Arnold Behrens. May 14th of 2014, Glenn Barnard. June 25th of 2014, Calvin King. July 23rd, 2014, Harvey Fossler. He just recently passed away. August 6th, 2014, Don Noakes, Jr. October the 1st, 2014, Lloyd Lane. November the 12th, 2014, Calvin and Orville Weber. December 10th, 2014, Norman Trout. February 4th, 2015, Bob Winslow. March 4th, 2015, Lloyd Drake. And today we'll be honoring George Pavlik. And I will turn that over to you for that. And again, I think periodically, maybe annually, we should go through and read the names because we do see that some of these veterans that we honor do pass on. And it's always nice to continue to remember them. So
Thank you, Matt. Tremendous program, and we receive a lot of positive comments and feedback from it. We appreciate Phil's the job he's doing, his help, and something the board always looks forward to do. So, Phil?
Well, at this time, it's my pleasure and honor to introduce this month's selectee, George Pavlik. George is a longtime, lifetime resident of Gage County and served in the United States Army Air Corps. He enlisted in October 27th of 1942 and served until March 29th of 1946. Some of his awards are the Carbine Marksman Medal, American Theater Ribbon Medal, European Theater Medal, Good Conduct Medal, Victory Ribbon, World War II Victory Ribbon, and last but not least, the Air Crew Wings. At this time, it's my pleasure to introduce George Pavlik.
George?
Well, good morning to everybody.
Morning.
I'll begin by my big thank you to our county board members for accepting my name as Veteran of the Month. Inviting is truly an honor, and I'll cherish this the rest of my life. I just hope I can uphold my end of it. Also included, the thanks to Phil Ditbrenner and also his secretary, Shirley Patterson, who accepted my name and got the ball rolling. And last but not least, Ron Vitrosky, who put my name in, and I appreciate it. But before I begin my talk, I'll be the first to admit I'm not a public speaker, I'll try and make this as short as I can, but I want to give you some ups and downs of my time in the service. There was times that I thought I should have done more, but as one of them deals, I got stuck in the West Coast Training Command, and they said, once you're there, you'll never get out. Well, it was true. But anyway, so I'll make my speech short. But it also brought me back to thinking that this off the subject, but I retired about 30 years ago, and I was a maintenance man in the hospital out here at the BSDC for 10-plus years. But anyway, when I retired, they threw a big party, retirement for me, former at the Tigers' Den in Odell. Well, it really surprised me, but I knew what was coming sooner or later, give a speech. Well, I got up and got a speech, and I told them that I was a poor speaker and not a public speaker, and I never intend to be one. And I said, I'll make this talk very short. A friend of mine in the back popped up and he says, is that a promise? Well, certainly today it will be short. Okay, so I was admitted in 1942 in October, and this was long before some of you people were born. So, but I was inducted and had my physical and stuff at Fort Crook, Omaha, which is now off at Air Force Base. Well, being a little country kid from the farm, never hardly left the state of Nebraska, I was in for some surprises. But anyway, we took our oath of office and sworn in. But they let us out of the building. We crossed the highway. You know, it runs right there. And across the railroad tracks and lined us up. I think it's about 20 of us, if I remember right. Lined us along the railroad tracks, and that's where we got sworn in, took that step forward. Then we waited there for the train, and we were headed for Fort Leavenworth. Well, we got there late in the evening, and They led us to us to barracks, which hadn't been used for years, and I think they said the last it was occupied was 3 C-boys, if you remember. I don't remember any of that. But anyway, it hadn't been used for years. A dusty floor, probably 1/4 inch thick. So we had to clean up the floor and check out our costs and bidding. But the next day, we learned what was coming in. of course, they took our clothes and sent them home, and we got our haircuts and things that to do. But it wasn't long before we learned march, left face, right face, back face, and all that stuff. and the second day, I think it's about the second day I was there, I got on KP, so I learned what that was pretty quick. But we was only there about less than a week, and so there I went to Bakersfield, California, and I wasn't there but about a week, and they shipped us again, and we ended up in Pecos, Texas. And Pecos Army Airfield was just being built, and it wasn't quite done when we got there. So I remember helping build some of the sidewalks and stuff. One corner of the field was set up, and especially for basic training. And off myself, and we had a captain, I can't remember his first name, but his last name was Mann, and he was a career Army man in the infantry. Well, they put him up here to Pecos to lead basic training, and he let us know right quick that we weren't soldiers unless we had that training. So we got put through the mill, and I mean, nobody regretted it after that, but it was learning experience. Well, anyway, then the planes we had were B-13As, which is a basic trainer. But I started out as a clerk in the headquarters squadron, and I typed applications for fellows that wanted to send money home, and also if they wanted to take out government bonds. Well, I decided that it was a good job because I met a lot of people all over the country, and they were so happy when I could help them and stuff. But it wasn't my idea pushing typewriter all this time, so I asked for a transfer. Well, I got it, and then they sent me to airplane and engine school. That lasted about a little over six months, I think. But anyway, before I left Pecos, it was converted to, instead of basic training, it was converted to a advanced training for pilots going into the ones that were going to fly multiple engine aircraft. And I got to work on quite a few planes. But in the meantime, they were crying for pilots, and I decided that I'd like to fly a P-51 fighter plane. Well, all the young guys that age wanted to fly a fighter plane, you know. But anyway, what they done was they took names, and you know, they got 50 names. We had to take this screening test, which I don't know, some of you've probably heard pilots and stuff talk about it, but the 50 of us, and I got a surprise because out of that 50, the people that passed that was in the single digits, and fortunately, I felt I was one of them that got to stay, but it didn't last long. The last thing we had to do was take the physical, and I passed everything except when it comes to the eye test. Both eyes had to be 20/20, and they couldn't be corrected with lens or nothing then. And one was 20/20, the other was 20/30. Well, it got turned down. Well, I almost cried. It just, it was a big disappointment because I didn't want to fly. Some of my friends thought that that's was a bad thing to do. They tried to tell me that, why do you ever want to do that? He says, get yourself blown up out of the sky and this. I says, well, to me, I want to learn to fly. What's the difference whether I get blown up in the air, on the ground, or at sea? I wanted to fly. So anyway, it didn't work out. So, but anyway, then from there, I was sent to Victorville, California. And when I got there, they had the P-39, which is a fighter plane, but it wasn't too popular. We sent a lot of them over to Russia, Lend-Lease, and a lot of their aces flew the P-39. But our planes mostly were P-51s, P-47s, the P-38 and stuff. But anyway, it wasn't long, and they converted. They got in the B-24 bombers, which was a four-engine bomber. And so fortunately then, I got to be on the flight crew. I took the exam, and the physical then wasn't as strong as it was for the pilots and them, so I did get to be a flight engineer in B-24, and it was quite an experience. We flew a lot of training missions and a lot of targets, and we had picked out Southern California and even Arizona. We went to practice bomb on Hoover Dam, and we had several. Two I remember most was Catalina Island off of Los Angeles, and also the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. But our flights were none of them were less than 5 hours. But the deal was we was training navigators and bombardiers to bomb by radar, which was something pretty new then. It was really an experience. One of the engineers' job was when they made their bomb run, they had a camera in the back of the ship, this had to be on a clear day. If it was cloudy, you couldn't see, but they would still make the bomb run, complete the run. But if it was clear, then it was the engineer's job to go back there and open this hatch in the bottom of the plane. And when the bombardier completed his run and pushed the bomb release, instead of dropping bombs, it clicked the shutter on his camera, and it supposedly pinpointed about where the bombs would hit. But anyway, it was if the air was smooth, the engineer's job to level that camera. There was a bubble level in the top of the camera. You had to keep that level. Well, if the air was smooth, no big deal. But if that thing was bucking like a bucking bronco, it was impossible. But anyway, I made a lot of flight training missions, but never got to fly any combat. And I always thought, really, I wished I could have done more, but that was one of them things I had no control of. They put you where they wanted you, and so I was kind of disappointed in that. Then the B-24, that's, I knew it's 4 year time, but that was known as the flying coffin. And the B-17 crews always told us that B-24 was the crate the B-17 come in. But anyway, I had my share of a three-engine landing and stuff, but everything always turned out good. So I did have some scares, but that them days that went with the flying. So anyway, then from there, they decided to send me to B-29 school, which was the latest aircraft in its day and really a beautiful ship, and it done its job. But anyway, they sent me to this school, so I figured, well, it looks like I'm headed for the Pacific. Well, I completed that course in B-29s, and they sent me overseas, and instead of going to Pacific, I went to Europe. I never saw another B-29. But that's the way it was. And I think what happened was there was 30 people in the class. And you know how the Army done things. They the top half went here and the bottom half went there, and next time it just reversed, the bottom half went there and this and that. So anyway, I was kind of disappointed in that too, but I only got to serve overseas, that's less than 6 months. So, but where I ended up at was in a little town of Eckelheim and Germany, and when we got there, entered the Harvey Harbor and come across to France and into Germany and ended up at Eckelheim, and they had A-26s. Well, they weren't there very long, and they flew all them out, and rather than shipping us out, they transferred T.D. White into the 9th Battle Division of the infantry. So I spent time guarding Geo, prisoner of war, and we had a big stockade there, and I know you've seen this, don't we? Had these towers built, one on each side of the thing we kept there. So it was quite an experience, too. But so I always told people I was disappointed, but yet I could work on the plane, and I could run it, and I even had a taxi permit. I could taxi him, but I couldn't fly him. So what a disappointment. But anyway, of course, then when we came home, we landed in New York and entered Captain, Camp Kilmer, and I think it was in the Camden, New Jersey. And it wasn't long. We was back in Fort Leavenworth, and that's where I got my discharge. But outside of that, I had a lot of ups and downs, and I could probably talk forever on some of it, but I'm not going to take that time today. So, but I certainly appreciate being picked for this nomination, and I'll cherish it, like I say, the rest of my life. I might add I always feel like today the world is getting to be a dangerous place, and I'm not going to tell this and expect you to, this is my own view, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, or you agree with me or disagree with me, but I still feel that we need a strong military. And in order to have a strong military, then you better have the ammunition and the weapons and the equipment to do it with, battle ready, and win the battles. Well, I don't know. It's expensive, yes. But how do you put a price on our freedom? You know, I'd hate to think about losing it. So all I can say is God bless America, and pleasure being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
George's been a good friend of mine and also my landlord for almost 40 years, and you wouldn't find a better guy or landlord to know. So,
and he's certainly the best farmer, too.
on behalf of the county, George, I'd like to give you this as a token of our appreciation.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, George.
All these young guys now go into basic training, and they get on a plane and fly somewhere nice. And I remember going to basic training, getting on a train in Marysville, Kansas, to ride to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And I'd never been on a train before, even. But anyway, so we appreciate you, George. We appreciate all you did.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And don't let anyone tell you any different. You give a wonderful speech.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
Excellent.
It. Excellent. It's certainly a pleasure to talk to you people.
Thank you, George. Okay.
Thank you, George.
We'll go back to our committee reports. Equalization? Nothing. Finance and insurance.
District.
Well, let's see. We talked about the transfers. That was a big dollar amount. That always shows up as an expense, but it's just changed for operations. So it's almost like you'll spend it twice because it'll move from the budget, moves from the general fund to another fund where Gus will spend it. So. But other than that, we really don't have a whole lot. That was a joke. So.
You also made the comment you're going to start contacting the departments for budget.
Yeah, we'll need to start that. We're approaching May here pretty quick, so we'll send out requests, and we'll want people to turn those in. And really not a whole lot more than that, really, at this point. So we'll start that process. And I think we're still going to look at step plans and try to make sure we stay current with that. So I know Dawn's kind of collecting that data that's out there. And so I asked Dawn to send out a notification to all the villages and towns and cities in Gage County regarding our Parks and Recreation grant application. Those are due the end of April. So she sent those out. So they'll start to have their meetings the 1st of April, and they're due the end of April. So if they want to put in for that, they'll do that.
Human Resource Employee Relation. I'll give a short report on that. We did have a meeting. John wasn't able to because of commitment. But Gus, part of what we had several things, I guess. One was our sick leave for family members. We visited about that, and particularly foster children. And we asked Dawn to look into the FMLA. And we're going to have more discussion on that. That's Federal Medical Leave Act or whatever. The county needs to abide by the FMLA, but as far as our handbook goes, we need to list exactly in our handbook, I guess, for the payment of how certain situations would qualify for our county. And so we will have, I think the next committee meeting, we'll have another human resource meeting again to start that process about detailing that or outlining that.
We need to update our handbook.
To update our handbook to address that situation and stuff. Because currently we're thankful for somebody brought that forward to us and asked that question, but we don't currently have that in there. The Leave Act is they qualify for the leave, but the part about how our county handles those situations as far as paid leave, that we need to clarify in our handbook. So,
and those issues, I'm not sure if you noticed, the legislature has been addressing some of those issues also as far as leave is concerned, and if you have foster children and what are your benefits and so on. So some of the questions that Gus has had relative to his department as well as ours. So.
And then at that time, we did have, too, quite a discussion on time clocks at our human resource meeting and how it affects different departments. They are currently, the time clocks here are all installed. They're doing what they call basically trial runs and seeing how.
We have to get to all the departments to get their fingerprints logged in. And I think we're down to, we've got to go over. One night we're going to go over and the sheriff's department to hit those between shifts. We've got some of his deputies that have come over here, and then we need to do the sheriff's department, highway department, I think is basically what we've got left, and we'll hit both of those locations probably.
But part of that, we had a discussion about how to clock in the deputies who are located outside the city of Beatrice or whatever, and Gus and Bruce have been visiting about that, and if it's doable. We're trying to work out something whereby the 911 center can help facilitate how we can clock them in. Currently, they clock in when they come on duty. They call the 911 dispatch center to clock in. Now, we just, to coordinate it with our system, Gus and Bruce have been visiting about that. So either one of you would like to comment on that, you're sure more than welcome.
Thank you, Bruce. We have been talking a little bit about that, and as I told Gus, we're not crazy about adding some separate system that we've got to do for one entity as we dispatch for 17 different fire and rescue departments and four different law enforcement agencies, and we're looking to regionalize, which would mean we would add more players, and that benefit to that is going to hopefully cost us all less down the road for 911 services. But one of the things we always struggle with is if we do something unique to an entity that requires it, then it's how do you justify that with everybody else? Someone mentioned that there would be a payment or something. That's the money isn't really the issue. I mean, it's not something you would quantify with a dollar amount. We'll do if that what you end up with, and you say, hey, we got to do this. I mean, we'll help you. We'll do what we can to work. But I just, like I told Gus, that's not my favorite answer to this problem, is having a dispatcher doing something separate like that. So
we had probably a good 15 minutes, maybe half an hour discussion on this, because it doesn't affect a great number, but it does affect some. And then your secretary, she was here too, the one that manages over there. And how do we...
Right. We have we currently have it in the... The computer system, when someone goes on duty, it puts that officer, deputy, employee on duty, and it takes them off duty. And we can give you that. That's viewable currently. And that would be our preference, but I understand that that's not necessarily the greatest solution for you all. But so my point is, if you need me, you need us to do it, certainly we'll work with you. That's not my first choice. So.
And Bruce, you have that from a previous schedule, or you have that from them calling you and letting you know that they're on duty?
Well, the computer-aided dispatch system that we have and have had for ages does that. It'll tell you, like I can go back and tell you what time Officer A came on, what time Officer A went off duty, and we can print that out and give you that. It doesn't show you necessarily if they were on lunch, or because we don't kick them out of service because they're still subject to call, and it's not as clean as a time clock, but it is available in that fashion. But like Gus said, it's a lot more work for them, so...
So it
falls in the category. There's not a great answer to it.
That's basically it. We knew when we decided to implement time clocks that there would be issues arise, or we'd have to work with different departments or different groups.
Right.
And this is one of them. And we thank you for visiting with us and working with Gus, because we will come to a solution. We will work it out. And but it's a concern for some of the deputies.
What's that?
We appreciate you working.
Well, we're going to all in this together. We all got the issue. Just keep in mind that when we do one for one, then if Agency B comes in and says, well, we'd really like you to do this and hold these and have this machine, and then pretty soon it gets cumbersome. So once in a while, it's fine, but we just try to keep that to a minimum. So for what it's worth. You bet. Thank you.
Thank you, Gus. All right. Bruce, yes,
yeah. Good looking. Don't do that, please.
Things are going really well.
You can leave now. Two things.
I got one step ahead of myself. I'm saying
one step forward. Now we're taking two steps back.
How did I invite you? I don't know.
And of course, to add to what Bruce said, it depends. A lot of us got with CIR. Some of this might be a moot point. We don't know, but we better have our eggs in a basket in advance. And as you know, the concerns I have on this, without being said again. So that's, I guess, that's what makes sure Bruce is here and you guys could exchange some comments. So at least you know where we're at on it then.
Well, you need to hang out if you want the eggs in the basket. We'll get those as fried as Sunday.
Okay. I like to have rotten ones and throw it a few people, maybe.
We'll have lots of eggs in the basket.
Yeah.
Terry's in a rooster business.
We got the rooster here today.
That's right.
We do.
Somebody laying the eggs.
Right there. Anything? Law enforcement. Or emergency management.
As far as the time clocks discussion, I didn't know we were passing on already. I guess one thing I would say is it seems like there's some anxiety, and I know I experienced this when we implemented the same thing in the business that I work at, and I'm sure Matt can say the same thing. There's always some anxiety with change and everything. The one thing I would advise any employee is that keep record of your time and keep track. I mean, responsibly, you should do that anyway, even after it's been implemented. But keep track of your time, and I think we'll all find out that this will work itself out, and it'll be a good deal in the end. But just make sure you keep track of it, and if you have any discrepancies, make sure you bring them forward. That's, the one thing I'd say about it. I had some anxieties at the elevator when we put it in, and everybody kind of kept track of it there for a while, and then they decided, it's pretty well doing the job, and it's right. So, you know, they've all kind of tailed off on doing that. So,
I totally agree with that. I mean, there is a lot of questions and anxiety, and then you implement it, and then you wonder what you were ever worried about. And I'm sure this will be basically the same way.
Any more comments? If not, nope, no.
Okay,
thank
now
you.
We can go.
Thank you. Yeah, law enforcement, emergency management.
Emergency management. We had lengthy discussion on the Blue Springs Tower again. Surprise, surprise. And that'll be coming up here shortly. So we'll kind of not rehash that at this point. As far as law enforcement, probably the big item, I guess, I'd kind of like to have a discussion on today is Matt and I did spend a little bit of time with the sheriff this last week, and we discussed some different items as far as this jail committee that we're putting together. And I guess the first thing I want to say is that this is not a build a new jail committee. This is get a plan together long term for the Gage County Board of Supervisors, because at this point currently there is no plan moving forward. We're spending money over here on an old facility that's needing some rehab. And I think what we need to do is we need to decide, are we going to spend some money, serious money, and get that old girl up to speed to where she's efficient and safe for our employees? Or, you know, are we going to look at going another route? And so I think at this time, you know, we need to start looking at what our options are going to be. One of the things that we discussed as an option that I think we want to look a little deeper into is starting, you know, to build a new facility where you would start on the east where the parking lot is now and work your way over. That was one of the things that we discussed, and we can discuss it here at more length in just a second. One of the other things I think that we discussed a little bit, and that's, you know, reworking what we have now and working with the facility we got and redoing everything so that it's up to speed and we're not always chasing the fire marshal or the jail committee to make sure that we're compliant. And then, you know, there's, you know, several other options that are available out there, and quite frankly, until we get into this and really start looking at it, I don't think we know what all of our options are. So anyway, I guess I'd like to open it up for Matt, first of all, and Gus to kind of fill in on anything that, you know, they took out of our discussion the other night, and then move it on to the whole board to bring up anything they would like to say.
Well, I'll say we're not asking to spend any money. We're not asking to get an architect. We're not asking to do anything like that. But one of the problems that we run into is we're responsible as a board for infrastructure and buildings, and though I have not been a big fan of a new jail, you know, I've been a fan of maybe doing a 96-hour hold, and if you run the numbers, is it more efficient to transfer people out? And, you know, the goal would be to maybe look at the cost-benefit of both and present those. But right now, we couldn't even tell anybody in the public what the costs are. If we look at a 35 to 40 bed, we have no idea what that would even cost us. I got some real angst, even though it's cheaper. I don't think we're providing the taxpayer any value in any money we spend over there. There's no value in that. It's because it's just kind of going down a hole. Safety is an issue. It's well documented. It's a jail that we're trying. We've got a lot of surveillance stuff in. We see some bills come across for that. We've got a lot of old infrastructure over there. We've got an ADA issue on the south side. It's an old facility, and I think the goal was to, you know, what would it cost? What, we don't even know. We talked about just putting out an RFP. Here's the land we've got. We're looking for about this big. We're not looking to employ an architect. Surely these companies have boilerplate projects out there and say this is about what it would look like. But, you know, jumping off right now, to continue to do nothing, we know people voted on that. We're sensitive to that. But to continue to do nothing and not even have a plan for it is probably a pretty poor idea to do nothing. So I appreciate the fact that we're just talking about this. We're not asking to spend any money. We're not going to be putting anything out, asking to have an architect. We do have some issues over there that are going to be expensive. And I just, you know, I'm kind of coming full circle that there's just no value in what we're spending over there. We're just Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid. And it is cheaper. It's cheaper than a capital expense. There's no doubt about it. But you keep doing that, and and then you just still got an old, something old over there. So that's kind of what we talked about, was just figure out what it would even cost. Send out an RFP and say, what do you got? Give us a boilerplate. What would it take on that area across the street from the courthouse? And just kind of kick that thing around. We may kick this around for a couple months, a year, a couple years. We don't know, but right now we don't have anything. So that was kind of the general discussion. There's no exciting thing about putting anything on an election to have people vote on. There's nothing about ringing up a bill or anything. It's just meeting and gathering information is where we're at now. So that's what I took out of that.
And there, that's a good report, and I think you're exactly right. There are times when this board and other boards have to make decisions that aren't necessarily very popular, but when we have the information, we have the exposure, the liability that we have in that facility, and going forward, it's not going to get less, it's going to get more. This board's going to have to make some tough decisions, and we're going to have to be willing to say, hey, this is something that is good for the people of this district and create more safety, and we'll just have to make that decision. So let's just not forget that. Our taxpayers said, no, we don't want to spend any more money, and it's pretty much a normal thing. But they don't have to go over there and stick their neck in that noose and be afraid of whether I'm going to make it out or not. And anyway, so that's all I have to say.
And with you guys talking, I guess I, like Denny said, with the people saying we don't want a new jail, very adamantly. It's good to be talking on this. Chief Lang transferring a lot of people right to Lincoln without even stopping here. He said that's cheaper and easier for him. Like you said, a holding facility, kind of minimizing what we actually have here, and then also looking at, like you and I looked at the numbers a little bit, the cost actually just to contract with other counties and have them hold it, there was a huge difference. I mean, we had a lot of money left or potentially left over after just transferring everything over to other counties instead of holding them ourselves, long-term and short-term. So I guess having the committee, I think that's probably a good idea, just so you guys can visit about it and bounce ideas off of each other instead of trying to jump into something.
Can I comment on those numbers? Just because we talked about that too. Right now, we spend about, the budget is $750,000 in the jail. I think that's that.
It was somewhere in that 700 range. I remember from before.
750. Well, right. I think that's right. We figured up that it was probably around $70 a day expense. Is that what we figured?
Yes.
Something like that. And we just were throwing around numbers. If your average daily population is between 25 and 30, and if he can send somebody out for $45 a day, all of a sudden you're looking at a transport or expense of around $400,000 to $500,000. You know, so about $250,000 savings by not doing anything and sending everybody out. And sometimes those folks will even come pick them up. But you still got to, I guess.
You need something.
Got to have something.
That'll just help, though. Like, since you guys are looking at that, that could help with the size or the type of facility, though. I'm just glad you're talking about that.
And that's what we looked at, was bring a couple different, you know, here's this, here's this, here's that. Maybe four different ideas. I won't even call them options because we're not picking anything. Just ideas. What do we think? And then run the numbers on them and see. Because right now, other than just coming up with some fanciful numbers on a calculator, we don't know what the costs are. That's been 6 years ago that was voted on, 5 years ago, so nothing's gone down.
No.
We did budget. We budgeted $808,751, and a year ago, the previous budget, not this year, we spent $781,954.
Yep. And that's, Myron, that's the jail budget.
That's just the jail budget.
Right. That doesn't include any... That doesn't include any...
some of the repairs or expenses.
Yeah, we got another line.
Have another in buildings and ground. We have another line.
$25,000 budget.
Yes, and that would be above and beyond this. This is just for the operation of the jail.
Right.
And so on. And go ahead, Matt.
Gary, and we also talked very peripherally about how do you do a survey, or how do you get a input from the public. And, you know, if you do a random website, you're going to get a bunch of people that are going to try and hammer that thing and give you skewed numbers. If you do an unofficial survey where people could just stuff the ballot box, if you will, and you get a skewed. The goal is to really get an understanding of, you know, what are people thinking. But again, we're not asking to expend any money. We're not coming to the table with options. We're just trying to come up with some idea of what it would even cost.
I will kind of on a light note, I was at a meeting here a couple weeks ago with Willis Ledke from Saline County, and I just threw out this comment. This was a light note comment. I said, yeah, we were even talking about coming and building over here in Saline County right beside your guys because we think that'd be the cheapest cost or whatever. He says, I'm ready to meet when you guys want to meet. So, call Willis. But we, not to even joke about it though, we have at one time, maybe our cheapest cost is we'd go over and build a 20 some holding unit over there with them and start sharing costs. We don't know that.
Yep.
But, no, I thank you very much. I think that's something that we need to continue to pursue because that's a cost over there. We know the cost. The costs keep coming every year. We know we have so many costs over there because of our facility. At some point, is it going to be necessary to upgrade or to build or what? So, and at least we are. The good part is we're having some of those discussions now. When we get to a point where we're ready to make a decision, that's probably a ways down the road. So, thank you. Anything else? Emergency management, nothing. Nope. Okay. Road and bridge, Terry.
A few of these items that we discussed will be come up later on, too. Galen talked about recommendations as far as the backhoe loader. He'll give us a recommendation later. Rock and gravel is discussed. Philly Bridge will be closed for work to finish that project on April 13th. Hickory Road. We've met with five landowners for easements on discussions. Nothing's finalized there yet. I guess a big thing is we have some money. We had Galen budgeted for a pickup, replacement of a pickup, and it was the sign truck. And it was a 2000 GMC one-ton dually. It has 345,000 miles. We've got some pretty decent bids on the other equipment we had. We feel there's enough money. And at the first, when he went through all of his equipment needs, we have a bridge crew truck, which is a 1997 F450. Has 170,000 miles. It's showing some weakness. So with the amount of money left in his budget on equipment, we directed him to go ahead and look at replacing both of those trucks. So he'll come back in a week or two with specs or whatever we're going to do on that. Township meeting, well-attended township meeting last Thursday. One of the fuller crowds we've had there. I guess, like always, the main topic was gravel. You know, availability, supply. You know, as of right now, we're still working on our fall allocations. So we're behind, and we've always never seemed to get caught up. So we're going to try and look at some different options there, see if we can't get things squared up. We've been lucky. You know, we've had, shall I say, decent weather, so not a lot of complaints. It was pretty civil. Dwayne Party, he's retiring from the Township Association as the chairman. So this is his last meeting he'll have, so we don't have to put up with him anymore. Anyway, Roger had a tree letter put together. He handed that out at the meeting with the township officials, which is a response to tree trimming along the right-of-ways and everything of the county roads. I think that'll be helpful to those township people. Boswa, John and I attended a Boswa meeting last Monday, and there were rates that were supposed to go into effect, a raise in rates. They decided not to do that raise, so they're going to keep it flat. The cost will be the same. There was discussion about Saturday service, like for trees and everything. A lot of them wanted to stay open 4 days a week. our four Saturdays a month, you know, and like I said, it's the same old thing. That's not going to be good enough for some people. Pretty soon they're going to be open Sundays. You know, you got to kind of look at the help too, you know, because that Saturday there from 9 to 1, I think is what it is. They wanted to be open a full day. Well, to me, you got to consider your help too. If you're going to have him working there Saturdays, you're going to be off sometime during the week. They've only got 4 employees, I think. And yeah. So it's going to stretch the availability.
It was not so much a full day as 4 Saturdays a month for the summer instead
right.
of 2.
Right.
And then we discussed the times. But
yeah. Other than that, other than what we've got coming up here, that's about it, Myron.
Thank you. And we will, at the end of the session here, we'll have a closed session on Hickory Road, and we will be at that closed session. We'll be talking about the negotiations that we did have with the landowners. We had real good discussion with them this past week. I'll just talk a little bit here about it. But this past week, Galen had contacted several of them, and I met with Jeff Wagner and Galen, and we met with four or five of the landowners down there in Galen's office, and Galen has contacted a couple of the others, too. We did make real good progress on visiting with them about what kind of our offer was to them. A lot of them showed a lot of interest in that, and we will be in our closed session talking about the possibility of maybe how that will go forward. At some time when we get the negotiations done for the easements, those will all be brought forward here in the meeting, and because we'll have to vote on all those as public record when that is done or accomplished or whatever. But basically, the dollar amount or whatever kind of we agree on, Jeff made the comment that they actually send out the forms to the landowners, and then the landowners would have to sign those and saying that they would accept those and send them back. And then after that, before the project starts or sometime, there would be a deed done. So, you know, currently, like I said, we're still in conversations with them. They were very interested. They asked a lot of good questions about the road out there. Every one of them had the same comment. They realize and they all want to get it done, but then they also, it's their land. So we realize that too. But we had a lot of good conversations, so.
Do I understand right, the plans aren't done for Hickory Road then?
Galen, you help out. The plans from the bridge west are done.
But we can't, from the bridge east they're not, so we couldn't put this out for bids even if all the land was, all the land agreements were taken care of.
Well, what we've always talked about here is though, and Terry really, our goal has been, and Minnelli and Wagner have put this into basically two separate plans, the Bridge West and the Bridge East. And our first goal has been, we want to complete that from the Bridge West.
So that would be two separate bids.
There'll be two separate items because there's a lot of dirt work to go on the east side, a lot of leveling out to be done over there. So that hopefully gets done prior, quite a bit prior to the paving process. There's a little over a mile of pavement to the bridge. That was the first
on the west side.
On the west end.
Yeah.
Are you still thinking about having grading crew do the dirt work on the east?
I don't think that's going to be I don't think we're capable of doing it. It's going to take scrapers.
Right.
I don't think we're capable of doing it. You know, we can do the west side we talked about. Galen thought that was not a problem, but the east side with the amount of correction we have to do in the land and the slopes and everything, I don't think we're up to it. No.
Is it realistic that could go this year yet, the west of the bridge? Or
I'll visit a little bit with what Jeff said, Jeff Wagner. We've got a few more things to get done here. The easements, once we get a good deal on the easements, and then a couple of the other smaller things, but they can do that. If we put this out to bid in a month or two, a lot of it or most of it depends upon the timing of the construction crews and stuff. Some of them might be booked this year, wouldn't be able to do it till next year. Jeff made the comment that we'd probably leave a pretty wide window in there as far as when they would be allowed to do it in this, so you get a cheaper bid. You know, if somebody's full this year and can't do it and you eliminate 1, 2, or 3 bidders, you're looking at maybe an increased cost. So, the plan is, or Jeff made the comment, would sure like to get that out to bid here in the next 2-3 months, maybe 4 at the most, you know, or whatever. Now, whether or not it'll get done this year, that's an unknown, you know, or whatever. So it, so a few more things need to fall in place, you know, and everything. Moving forward and getting the easements done, though, that's the main, I guess, thing we need to get accomplished first, because one, hate to say it, one easement out there could hold up that project, you know. So,
Myron, I'll just make this comment. With every day that passes, the likelihood of it getting done this year is going to be less and less.
So. Yeah. But Jeff also did. I'll just talk a little bit about the east section. He said that those drawings or plans are basically done. You know, there's not – the main scope of those are done. He also did say that sometime – once we get these west easements done, sometime here in the next – several months, we would start working on the east easements or whatever. So, but, you know, it may be something because of timing of the construction crews. It may be something that might get worked on about all at the same time. We don't know that. If we were putting this out for bids like in November of last year and they had this year, then, yeah, it'd be getting done. But since we're at this time in the timetable or whatever, he's not sure that the best possible bid will come, that they will get it done this year yet. So, and that's an unknown. So, and we want to save cost as much as we can, and we also want to be able to work with some of those crews. There may be a crew out there that says, yeah, they can do that, that maybe that mile and a quarter or whatever it is on the west side. And maybe if you tie them all together, you might get a better bid to you if you're doing the whole project. We don't. Those are things that we'll be working with Minnelli in his office and Galen and everybody to see when or how that will fall in place. But it is. I was really encouraged by our conversations we had with the people that came in for the easements. You know, because a couple meetings or meeting last meeting or I don't know when. You know, they wanted money and we thought that was just going to set it back quite a ways, but.
I could tell Terry was being very encouraging.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at Terry. Yeah. But no, they were. I will compliment a lot of them. They were very, very good. We had at least a half an hour. Some of them went longer meetings with them. They Jeff was there, had the whole that half inch thick of paper that's about this big, and you know, went over it with each landowner what how that would affect them, and they had some concerns or questions if something on their property. I know the drip irrigation and stuff and where all that is. But part of that we'll update the board on, I guess, the dollar amounts and stuff here in closed session. But that will be coming forward at some time once we get those signed or whatever. So
we don't have to deal with any chickens out there, do we?
Don't know if any of those guys have chickens.
Not right now.
No. Okay, just wanted to check. Sure.
Just a lot of farmers we have to deal with, so I don't know. Yeah.
A lot of scratching around.
Anything else in Road and Bridge? No. Because we'll do the backhoe and stuff here in a minute. Matt, do you want to visit about Engage here, or do you want to visit later?
We typically do if you want to do that, but you tell me what you want to do. We can do it. We can back it up, or we can...
Well, we don't have any time to vent, so I'm okay. Fine visiting about that.
So we'll let Galen and Mr. Beekman just kind of sit around and listen to us some more. To hand those down. Just have some information. This has come out. We've talked about this before, about some of the bylaw changes that Engage is proposing. And so I tried to bullet these out so everyone would have this in front of them. And total number of directors reducing from 12 to 10. There's some rationale there of how that would be accomplished. There's some staggering of terms there. Number 4 is a concern about 12 members is too many, and I guess Myron could speak to that as he's been on there, that how difficult it is to get somebody to do that. And for the length of the term, we do have folks that, you know, I think they jump in with the best of intentions, but work and life comes up and they've had to bow out. So we've had some partial terms that have needed to be filled. And there's also some desire to change the nominating committee, so that you're not putting out, I think it was Gary or Tiemann said something about a sacrificial lamb where you got to have two people up for the position and you basically tell one person, well, I'll come back the next time. And so I think that the goal is to to try and get a good group of people, but not alienate everyone and try to have a good representation from the board. So you can see there about on number two on the top portion on the Article 4, Section 2, number 2, try to attempt to maintain four from inside the city and four from outside the city, and allowing maybe some at-large members there to be, if they have some expertise in economic development, and maybe not necessarily live in the county. And then they're still hanging out there. It's not on this. It's, you know, us being ex officio members. And I know that there's still been some debate about whether or not how we like that, if we don't like that, how that'll affect it. So, you know, we need to have that discussion because there's going to be a members meeting on April the 14th. And that's the members based on who provides funding. And there's a member vote. And we get a vote as part of the members. That voting is still there. And then part of Engage as far as being a representative. So, you know, in a little bit that I've been involved with this group, Myra's been there for 2 years. I've been there just a couple of months now listening to the meetings. I guess I don't have a whole lot of reservations with the people that are there. I visited a little bit with Glennis about maybe trying to provide more information to the media. It's not specifics out of the closed sessions, but maybe more rounded, more what I want to say, buffered information, but still allow it. You know, as I sit there, you know, we don't need to know project specifics and names of companies, but try to continue to keep that open, but not destroy the process. And there doesn't appear to be any hesitancy to do that. So, you know, they're good people that are around there. They're community members that are around there. They're upfront about who's on there. They're easily contacted. But that's my opinion. And what do y'all think? And if, you know, having gone to a few meetings and looking at our unemployment of, I think they said 2.9%. You know, there's a lot of empty buildings. How, what type of ready workforce do we have? It's kind of hard. I think you got to do economic development. If you're not going to do economic development, just roll up the streets and shut off the lights. And I haven't met anyone in the community that's ready to do that. So we've got to be engaged in something. Also, I think the organization has to be flexible and be dynamic, and over a period of time it may change what may have worked a couple years ago. And I think that that's what we're seeing, is maybe an evolution there to try and see what's most efficient and what works. Again, that's my impression, having been there for a couple months listening to the people at the table.
And we need people to understand miracles won't happen here. We aren't going to get 27 industries that want to locate here this afternoon. And some people just expect that the money we spend on this is just, we're going to have miracles immediately. No, but we have to keep ourselves exposed to let them know what we have, to continue with our relationship building. And Glennis has done a great, great job of that. And I think it's been made very clear that our representatives on the board are voters on that board. And it's been made very clear that that is the case. And they can't take your votes away from you. So, anyway.
To echo some of Matt's comments, I think as this is, as I've been attending the board meetings, I guess the biggest, why we're looking at some of these changes is because of the time commitment. And it has really, when we developed this, we thought of meeting a month and, you know, no problem getting board members. And since it's been evolved to more than that, and I guess my main thing I look at that is activity. Since Glennis has got on board and really started, basically had a year almost now in the process, it's, seems to be getting busier. The activity's picked up, and maybe it's because, I don't know, her contacts she's making or people she's familiar with, but the time commitment of the people that are volunteers on this board has ratcheted up, and we've had... I don't remember. I know John Holmbeck was probably the first one, and he had other reasons why his time commitment. He was taking vacations in the wintertime in Florida. But since then, we've had, I believe, four or five that have had to resign just because in our bylaws it also says that you are required to attend, I believe, 75% of the meetings or a good share of the meetings. And some of these people, just because of their work, because of their family, just haven't been able to do that. And they realize that they don't want to hinder this process. Every one of them that I've visited with, at least when they've made the decision not to stay on the board, they don't want to hinder the process. They see what is happening. They enjoyed being on the board. That wasn't the issue. It was mainly the time commitment. And that's why some of these things, it's like any board, as you go along, you need to make changes. And that's what some of these are attempting to remedy here with this. So.
Makes sense. Good changes.
One other thing, and this is just kind of mentioning this too, Don here visited with me, or I don't know, Finance Committee a little bit, this quarter, I guess, or the claim that's coming in from Engage. Explain that a little bit, Tobias.
Well, I received an email from the city, and your agreement, I guess, is no more than $100,000. And so there's a claim that's going to be coming through that actually their payments or their expenses is like $22,000 for each of us. But based on your agreement that it won't go over $100,000, our claim will be $20,000.
Yeah, so you know they are watching their money down there. I mean they review the finances every month. Been doing a very good job because we made a commitment to do $100,000 a year, $25,000 a quarter, and here I call it with a full time person in Glennis and almost a full time person now in her assistant. Yet we are still, some of these quarters, we're still maintaining a very good budget to balance down there and stuff. So that indirectly saves us a little bit too, or whatever, but they do a very good job every meeting going over all the finances and making sure that any dollar amount so big that they okay that as a board and stuff. So it's, I like what the board is doing down there. Your comment was, if you don't have one, you fall behind. It's very, very true. And I'll make this comment. You never catch that lost time up.
No.
In this economic development, you never catch that up. You are always behind that. I see some real positive signs down there, though, especially with Glennis and what the – and especially the board. There's some of those members on the board, the amount of time they do, they put in. Andrea Schaefer and some of them, just fantastic job she's doing.
And people in DED, people in the state, people in the power companies – they see what we're doing now that's very positive, and so their attitudes, which had gone backwards, is coming forward again to know that we're moving in a positive way to really develop a good board and a positive attitude for Beatrice and Gage County.
Very good comment. Gary?
And almost as important, and I think sometimes we lose it, is the fact that we have good businesses and good companies in the county already.
Yes.
And it's almost as important that we retain those and we have good relationships with those people that are already here. And I think Glennis has done I've had several conversations with her about it, and I think she's done a really good job in touching base with these people and getting back to having them relationships so that, you know, they feel like they're a piece of the community and that they're wanted here. And I think she's doing a good job of making them connections. And I think she's going to take it a step farther as we move through this next year from the discussions I've had with her. So she's doing a good job on that, too.
One other quick comment. That Matt showed you here, these are bylaw changes, and that will be voted on the 14th, and it will be voted on not by the Engage board but by the membership as a whole, which is right now yet the county, the city, City of Adams, and City of Cortland. And hopefully as... they are developing a plan, starting to have a lot of discussions about how do we get more membership. So as we go forward, hopefully we'll have more of that. So, but these bylaw changes will be voted on by just the membership as a whole. So,
Myra just interrupted. We need absolute clarification because as we're operating now as an ex officio, not voting. Because that our agreement
that's included in the resolution.
Our agreement with Engage comes up in June, and that agreement is Engage has the bylaws of how they operate, and then we, by agreement with the city, say, okay, we'll do business with you as Engage and provide funding. We need to define. You know, they can make a bylaw change in there. It says they'll notify us of that, and then the Engage board votes on that, and that's how the bylaws change takes place. So that right now we're operating as ex officio, but in a couple months we're going to be looking at renewing that agreement. If we do not want to be, and we need absolute clear. You know, we don't need to vote on it here, but because we're not going, you know, to take that back and say we really want to be voting or ex officio. Right now, the city and the county or ex officio, because that's the legal interpretation at the time. Because it is a contract, and because we do hold the purse strings, and because I know those people there, I don't have a whole lot of grievance over it. But if that, but it's the will of the board, and then based on, and I always defer to Roger for legal counsel, is how do we need to operate, and if things have changed, again, it's about being dynamic and flexible so that we're operating appropriately. So let's have that discussion.
I wanted to, you know, I still don't agree with that. I don't like that at all, but that's a dead horse. When we're talking about that, and this is probably more for you, Roger, we can't be on a board that we're potentially giving money to and then vote on things that we talk about with that board.
That's wrong. That's wrong.
Yeah, you got to narrow that.
Narrow it down.
Narrow
more.
That decision even more. It's if you have that 784 monies. That was the hook that basically caused the problem.
The
840.
The LB
840. I'm sorry.
That was
wrong. But that's what created in the eyes of somebody. And they gave that opinion, and the city said, okay, that's a problem.
See, I talked to the city, and they said it had nothing to do with LB 840 or CDBG. It was just the idea that it was money given from the public body, and then we had a member on that board. And so I talked to him a little further, and I said, well, each of these places we give money, we have a board seat on most all of those. And he said, well, by their interpretation, this being the city, we would be in violation on each of those potentially.
And they're totally wrong.
They're totally wrong.
Absolutely wrong. And if you talk to Frank Daly up at Accountability and Disclosure, he will tell you that's wrong. Basically, you would wipe out boards,
absolutely.
Entire boards.
Yeah.
And that is
very,
not the
very
case.
Very good people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
so
you're trying to attract the best.
The city's wrong in their interpretation.
Region 5 services, the entire board is county elected county officials. Region 5 systems, entire board is elected county officials. Public Health Solutions, it's all county officials. That would wipe out every single person. NIRMA, you can just go down all the way through the state. It's the most ridiculous thing I've heard anybody come up with. I'm sorry I get excited about this, but it was somebody who was trying to be somebody who wanted control and lied, basically, about what was the interpretation. I haven't found one person that's interpreted this way. Not one. And I've talked to a lot of them between last time and this time. I'm sorry. But you would wreck county government. You would wreck everything that we do. Think of every board that we sit on.
That
every
was
board
my question.
That we sit on. It's just wiped out.
It didn't make any sense, because that's what I wondered. And
it's
after talking
the
to them, I thought, well, that really doesn't make any sense.
And you guys bring up very good points there. And I think Roger was going to try and get a hold of Accountability Disclosure.
Yeah, and talk to Tobias as well. Because, again, as I indicated last time, everybody can, you know, that's why lawyers can always find another side to argue. I think that was a very, very narrow interpretation. And, again, I don't agree with it. But that's what I'm telling you guys. I represent you and the county, not the city council, not the city, other than the city's in the county. But as far as, you know, I work a lot with the Attorney General's office. We don't always agree on an interpretation of a case. We try to resolve that difference, you know, and come to the best legal opinion to give to our clients. And again, people will disagree. That situation developed, as I understand, like an hour before the game started. That's real tough on anybody when you get that kind of like, oh, this is a problem. And I'm not going to be critical of that. You know, when that happens to anybody, including legal counsel, that's tough.
Well, I'm glad our legal counsel, and I'm glad our coaches, Riley, and I'm glad that they don't interpret like that, and they look at things that are the law and what we need to do and the truth, and that's how they deal with things. But that was manipulation. It was any way you look at it, and I don't want to get into any depth.
And what I can go back and I can wrong. Share with is that, you know, that one of the bylaw changes that we want to see as a board is that we will move from ex officio back to a voting member.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I want to point out is you do retain the purse strings. So, you know, again, if there's going to be a problem.
Just hate having a this is it or else type.
No, I don't think so. That's not the tone of the group. That's not the tone of the engage. I think it's I don't want to say it's laissez-faire because it's not. It's a serious business, but they're all professionals. You know, we talk about those things. The hammer is in the agreement. The hammer is in the out. The hammer is in the money that the vote, and I don't want to trivialize it. You know, it's a vote. That's great, but we're at the table.
And I think your engage board is totally in support of this. Totally. The members of that board are totally in support of this. This came an interpretation from one person, and that was it. And the board itself wants to keep it the way it is.
Feedback on any of the other. Feedback on any of the other as far as making it a little smaller.
That was a good steer, Matt.
Well, no, I hear you. That's what.
But Matt will bring that back to the board. He'll keep having that discussion, Roger, Tobias, and maybe we can get.
Well, it might be good for the two of you to visit.
The AG will give us an opinion, too.
There you go.
And again, we'll have discussion and input on that. Again, nothing against Political and Accountability Disclosure Commission, but it's like, I'll just leave it at that so I don't step into something.
Well, I'll take that back to them. What about, I think a smaller board in the interest of being efficient, I think, is okay. I guess I don't have any angst with that. Anybody else, any other input? And then the nominating committee, Myron can speak to that. He's been doing that for a couple of years. It's hard. Maybe. So instead of having the sacrificial lamb, and I know because I was at the table when we first did that, we wanted to make sure there was a lot of people to choose from and not regurgitate real or perceived. And I'm not throwing anybody on the bus of a good old boy network and going through. But if you've got somebody who's committed and doing a good job, we put a system in place that just kicks them off just for the point of kicking them off. You know, it's hard, and it's my perception. But, again, you were there for a couple of years.
No, that was probably the more difficult job I did as a board member. And at the same time, I got several of them, I didn't get several of them. We got several people to agree to serve on the board, and then they found out over a period of time that the time commitment and stuff. So it is. I really thank the people who do serve on this board because it's a time commitment and it's a volunteer. And what they are doing for the county, the city, and everybody is truly amazing. So I really thank them. And I thank the people who have stepped forward and given their names to be on here again. And I see this as a positive move for that board down there and stuff, that it'll really help them. So.
And as a third party, and I know the gentlemen don't like to speak up when we call on you, but you two folks, the media, Scott and Doug, you're sitting down there and you're seeing things that are taking place too. So, you know, then neither one of them's going to say anything now, but I know they're there. And so it's always kind of nice to get that perception too, because I guess I would consider them an independent third party that's just kind of sitting there watching and taking notes. So I always appreciate that feedback as well. If they see something that's not right, and I know Doug's talked to me and said, "Well, what about this? What about?" And I think that's good feedback, as is from the other people in the public too.
And I think the public, all the way across the county, the news media reporting and keeping them informed is fantastic. And I want to say thank you also to both of you because I think this is really important.
Okay, I think we'll move on. Next up, receive recommendations from Highway Superintendent and accept, reject, or award bids for industrial wheel backhoe loader.
By a couple guys.
Galen?
On the backhoe loader, I would recommend accepting the bid for a 2015 model 420F Caterpillar from Nebraska Machinery without the optional warranty for a price of $72,500.
Terry, any comments?
We had two bids. The John Deere was 80-some thousand. And what was the John Deere for sure, Galen?
About 82-something,
yes. And this one from Cat for $72,500. We're trading in a Caterpillar. The optional warranty on this machine was $8,000. We felt that it wasn't worth the extra money. We feel good with CAT's equipment that we wouldn't need to purchase this. So I would like to make a recommendation that we purchase the backhoe loader in the amount of $72,500 from NMC.
Second. Without?
Without the warranty.
Minimum warranty. Mm-hmm. Motion by Durgan, second by Bauman. Any other comments, questions? Vote? Well, 6-0 because Eric is stepped out of the room for a minute. So, yeah, 6-0. Good enough. Next up, receive recommendations from Highway Superintendent on the rock and gravel bids accepted at the last board meeting. And, Galen, would you just like to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, after going over all the bids that were submitted, and I'm talking the lowest total price, this would be for the gravel and delivered per township. The best price we got was for rock on. He was lowest on all the townships for gravel delivery, all but one township, and that was Adams Township, and Gina Trucking was low on that township. So I'd recommend accepting Rockland's bid for delivering for the gravel and for the delivery. That's a total price that he's the cheapest on. The second in line was R.L. Thiemann was the next best bid on the material for supplying the gravel and hauling it.
As we have in the past, Myron, I think it'd be prudent for us to accept all bids. Supplies, as everybody, we've no need to beat a dead horse. You know, sometimes they're not there. We have to move on. As I spoke before, we're behind, you know, and have a hard time getting caught up, I guess. So I'd like to make a motion to accept all bids for the rock and gravel. We only received one bid for rock. That was from the Sites Quarry. And Rock On was hauling that rock. It was a little bit on most of them, and some of the extra concrete was hauling. So with that being said, I'd like to make a motion to accept all bids, and as you say, we'll move. As one supply dwindles, we might have to move on to the next. So
we already voted to accept them all last.
Okay. I guess. So then we award this bid to the low bid then?
What?
Do we award this to the low bid or?
Just accept them all.
Just accept them all?
Accept them all. In the past, okay. We've just accepted them. We don't actually award to one particular one.
Right.
In case they can't fulfill it, then
right.
We just
go to the next one.
Okay.
So, yeah, we had it on here as much as anything for discussion,
okay.
So that make sure we did that. And,
right.
And I'll just make the comment there, Galen, in the office down there, they put together that spreadsheet there, basically, which shows all of them. They highlight the bids and which, according to our records, at least would be the low or the cheapest bids for the rock, the gravel, and the hauling and so on or whatever. And that's what they'll use here for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months until we bid again in September.
And these sheets are available down at the county barn if anybody would like to see them. See where you're setting on your price, your gravel, any township members, I'm sure they do. So these are available down there. Fred, would you like to make any comments about this?
Yeah.
Or Myron, I guess.
Oh, that's Fred, you. Yeah. I'm going to mention him here in a minute. We need your name.
Fred Beekman, 2400 Elk Street. Used to be a gravel producer, but thanks to Gage County, they put me out of business. And I said, we got going on here in the gravel business like we always are. People are 8 months behind, and we're giving them another bid with no consequences. You got two bonds, call the bonds, get a little bit of their attention. I'm going to tell you a good example. Read an article in the Belleville paper. The gravel pit in Scandia, Kansas was bitching because they was getting their gravel from Beatrice Concrete in Republic County, Kansas. And over here, you can't even buy a load of gravel. They're hauling it over there. So you guys need to stop some of that stuff. You can't stop it. The market's better somewhere else. They're running over there. And you guys... Well, we'll get it later. You know, if you guys get 6 inches of rain over a 3-week period, you'd be stuck in the middle of the road. And, you know, that's our mentality. The only person in life that ever called a bond was mine, and I was had every bit hauled ahead that I had the tickets for. So I can't understand it. Now we just act like, well, we'll move on. Where are you going to move to? Beatrice Concrete ain't going to do you no favors. Rock On, getting a little dab of gravel out of Tisa's pits. But we've run everybody out of business here in Gage County. You know, and it might be such a thing someday, Thayer County, they got their own pit. You guys might have to condemn a farm and put your new pit here somewhere where it'd be economy for Nebraska, for Gage County. You know, you can't buy a farm to put a gravel pit on. Cost is prohibitive for most people. Where there's gravel, people don't want to sell it. But, you know, you could have your own pit and have a contractor pump it or whatever and save this 60-mile haul, 80 miles, and then wait. If they can't find nobody better to sell to, just sell it to Gage County if it's convenient. That's my only complaint. And I don't know why we don't call some bonds in. They did it to me.
I don't know that either.
I got it resolved.
That's right. You helped me get it resolved. But
that is part of the
bid. It wasn't pretty, though.
Yeah, part of the bid is they're required to post a bond.
Yeah.
With
this. If they ain't doing nothing, you guys are sitting around here. Well, I guess the road's muddy. We'll wait for next year. But you guys need to take a little authority and wake these people up. Like Rock On, he has no more business bidding the whole county with no gravel. You know. Hoping to get a few loads from T, so thank you. But I haven't seen no action.
Fred, we talked at the Township Association meeting a little bit. They were talking about swapping rock out for gravel and stuff because there are a bunch of the townships. I've had a couple people in the office this last week, actually, that were very vocal and not happy about it. So I told them, call. Well, sorry, Myron. I told them give Myron a shout, and but they're talking about swapping rock out instead of gravel. Why are we behind? Do we need to be behind? And so hopefully we're talking about it here pretty quick.
Well, we got in Gage County, though. We have too many roads with gravel on. Maybe some of these secondary, less traveled roads, you could put some rock on them and get away from. You know, I drive you down there just the other day. They gravel 4 miles, and there's one person that got by with one load, and they graveled 2 miles getting there. So Gage County needs to. That's the townships that make them tickets, I guess. So anyway, I'm just liking to complain. I think we need some fair justice here. That's what my opinion is. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Fred, for coming and giving your comments. I believe since our township, well, we had discussion always throughout the year about rock gravel roads, and that's one of the main things affected, and we get comments about. But at the township meeting, we had quite a conversation on it. Our committee meeting Monday, again, we had quite a conversation on it.
Well, that is our number one complaint.
That is our number one complaint.
That
is
our number
one. For some people, it's Hickory Road yet, but.
Well.
We have some things that are always concerns here in the county, and we are working on them. And I know, I shouldn't say I know, I'm pretty sure our committee meetings in 2 weeks again, we will have some more discussions on this rock and gravel. And how do we maybe get caught up with our hauling? How do we maybe attempt to work with our supply situation and all those things? And Fred brought up a couple more good points here and stuff, too. And we'll keep having discussion on them. It's not that we're not getting nothing done, but the board sometimes, we don't move tomorrow and get it done. But without the discussion, we won't get it changed or whatever. So we are working on that. Discuss and approve or disapprove an inspection of the Blue Spring Tower. And I'll call Tim up here to give a
move. Move to approve.
Second.
Approve the proposed bid for an inspection on the Blue Springs Tower.
Move to approve allowing Tim to have somebody inspect that tower.
Okay.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, seconded by Bauman. Now discussion.
And
okay. Go ahead.
On Monday, Tim had brought to us for discussion a company that was willing to come in and do a more thorough inspection. I guess just Tim can go ahead and kind of expand on that.
Well, like I said, they call me once in a while and they kind of solicit work, see if we were doing any tower work at all around the area. So I brought up the attention what was going on out of Blue Springs, and so they offered to do an inspection to kind of explain the difference between analysis and inspection. Analysis did what it was supposed to do, was to check to see if, you know, if anything added would affect the structure. And so, but with this analysis here, they're very vague because they didn't climb the tower to do anything really to say, hey, this is unsafe, but they were going by some new regulations that were set in place that has then changed what can be allowed on that tower, what they feel that needs to be on that tower. But what this company is going to do, they're going to go through basically step by step, as long as it's safe for them to climb it. If they, you know, they won't climb it if they feel it's unsafe, obviously. But it'll give us a chance to have our own inspection, have our own idea of what needs to be done on that tower. I'll have our own, if we plan on keeping that tower, if it's safe enough to keep, it'll allow us to know what needs to be focused on as maintenance-wise. I took some pictures and sent them to them, so they kind of had an idea about the tower. And I took a picture of one of the anchor position or spots, and there was some rust on the turnbuckles, so that would make it kind of hard to adjust tension on the guys if need be. So that's something that would probably need to be looked into. But what they're going to do is going to give us a better idea of the status of this tower. I talked to them. They said about 3 weeks they could come around. They got an inspection to do in Creighton. So maybe we get them the same time then, or the next day or whatever it is. Hopefully it's good weather for them. But I think this is a good step for us to actually see what we got in this tower and not by what someone says from the ground. And I was just reading this this analysis here, and they like, for instance, the analysis is based on all tower sections having the same member sizes, sections, details. The full tower climb and mapping was not performed due to unsafe conditions because of the age and condition of the tower and anchors, guy elevations, tower loading, etc. were all estimated from the ground. I don't know how you can actually say that. And another note down here is, due the amount of overstressing in the tower members, the guy strands, as well as the age condition of the tower, we feel the tower cannot economically or safely be modified to allow any loading. We feel the tower has met and exceeded service life and recommend a new tower of all existing and future loads. There's a couple of things in here, but the question was anchors. They never really, I mean, you can see the anchors, obviously, if above ground, but you can't see, you know, if there's any cracking or anything like that, you know, spalling of the concrete that's in the ground itself. I mean, you can see the attachment, the metal, I can't remember, they call it a fan, something, I don't remember the exact words, but what it's called. But I think this is a very wise decision to do.
Any more questions? Just the proposed estimated cost of this was $1,000, and I think part of the reason why we haven't maybe done this in the past, done it before now, this cost that the state did, the inspection of the tower, somewhere along the line here, we've come up with that. It was going to cost us $25,000 or $30,000 to do that. We didn't know if it was necessarily prudent to inspect this tower for $25,000 or $30,000 just to have somebody come back and tell us yes or no, it's good, not good, you know. But this company here, for $1,000, we felt, at least everybody that's on the committee and we've talked to, felt it would be a very good choice to go ahead and have them come and give us, I guess, a little bit more detailed report and maybe why it does or doesn't meet the standards. And they also will give a proposal on maybe if this tower needs to be upgraded or fixed or repaired, maybe an estimate on that too. They will.
One of the things that fails towers as well as the guy wires, and when I took pictures of what I could for the guy wire, they said the guy wires looked well. from what we could see. I don't know, you know, I don't know what it's like up, you know, higher elevations, obviously. They said that how it was installed, the guy wires were installed at the anchor spot, was okay. Wasn't the greatest way to do it. Now, it probably hasn't ever been changed since it was installed. So, or maybe retensioned. Maybe they redid anything. So, you know, it's something that.
Tim, what's the name of the company that's doing the inspection?
It's Allstate Tower.
Allstate Tower, and they're out of
Henderson, Kentucky.
Okay.
Like I said, this is a sample report of a 420-foot tower. So it's about 50 pages. I go through, you know, each general condition, basically do a check off with safety, emergency, off-air, routine. Obviously, we're probably going to find something. Something's probably going to have to be fixed, and that's something that we're going to have to consider what needs to be done. They talked about an estimated cost of re-guying a tower. If that's what needs to be done, would be around $35,000 to $40,000. They gave me some quotes as well for, you know, dismantling, and they said that they would to dismantle it, since it's close to the ball fields without causing damage, they would take it piece by piece. But I was reading the Capitol Tower here that they were saying that since the structure said, or the analysis said, the structure was unsafe, they were afraid that their, what they call an engine or whatever it is that they use to take it piece by piece, would be too much weight on the structure, and it would, you know, would not be able to handle that equipment to tear it down. So that's why they said they would basically drop it, and that's what that capital bid tower was. So that will give them a better idea. Their estimate on a new tower that they offered was a little bit considerably higher than what Capital Tower kind of gave us a quote for. And then also they mentioned maybe going to a shorter tower, maybe 300 foot instead of 485. And also they mentioned about, you know, a freestanding tower instead of having guys, but that would approximately about $80,000 more to a tower to them. So just some more ideas, and, you know, maybe we can use them as well as a kind of a consultant once they see what the tower looks like and kind of give us a better idea what can be done to.
And just a quick update on the 24th, or last week, Eric, John, and I and Tim had our communication meeting again or whatever, and at that meeting we had enough discussion, we had enough interest on a lot of different things. Doug Ostergaard's going to come meet with us again at 10:30 and tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. Here, Doug is the guy that with First Wireless has been working with us, ideas on maybe what it would cost if this tower, assuming this tower was a no-go, then what it would cost to put equipment out in other areas and stuff. So he's going to come down and visit with us maybe for an hour tomorrow morning so we can keep progressing with that. And then once we get this proposal back, then we'll start to formulate a better plan or a plan maybe what needs to be done with the Blue Springs Tower.
So this will give us some information on the plan going forward.
And exactly.
Even though their price right now is higher, when you put it out for bid, you don't know. I mean, they might come in lower.
And they also said if we decided for them to dismantle the tower, that they would put that $1,000 towards that we spent on the inspection. So that's just to, you know, to try to secure more work for them. And I think there's something else.
Any more comments?
We need to sign that agreement, make sure they got insurance, and identify the county.
They do.
If they get up
here,
on the top.
I was going to give you one a second.
I feel bad, but
report clean.
That was the next thing I was going to ask, too, is...
We own that.
I know how we work as county with bidding. I was kind of looking,
It's below the minimum, and it's a service, so you don't have to worry about bidding. Okay. Not that I'm looking for work, but I'll look it over and write it down this afternoon.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have a motion to approve entering with that agreement with them to do the tower inspection in a second. Vote. Oh, we switched you. 7-0. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks. I guess, Tim, you know, make sure Roger has this reviewed so that, you know, the liability concerns are taken care of before you notify him.
Yeah, That's the whole thing that they sent me on their agreement that we would sign and so on.
Okay. I don't know how that works. Do they send, I mean, we'll require a copy of their insurance, I'm sure. Do they send that to you or do they send that to Tim?
No, they just, usually the insurance requirements on a contract, they have to file it with the clerk.
We usually get them in our office.
We might just make sure, you know, just, do you have insurance? You bet.
Yeah.
You know, just so that we've got that on file.
Obviously,
Does Jurgen's tower pushers?
You see, yeah.
I'm ready.
You bet I do.
I need something of the same insurance you got.
Okay. Next on the agenda, approve or disapprove referring tort claim received on 3/18/2015, Cindy Eason versus County of Gage to NIRMA.
Move to approve.
Second. Motion by Gary, motion by Lytle, second by Byers. Discussion here. This is a claim that they filed on behalf of the Cindy Eason. It happened out at the county fairgrounds last summer.
At the racetrack.
And they are, at least we visited with Steve Whitworth with the Ag Society. Roger has, Steve's been in to visit with Roger and Don. Them and their insurance company is also dealing with this a little bit at the current time, but they have filed this claim against us, and all this is doing is referring that on to our insurance carrier, NIRMA.
And I've spoken with Mr. Hinton, and again, I'll resist the any comments I may make in light of April 1st, but we don't own this property. We don't run the races. Lisa Wiegand is all over this. They're a carrier. I spoke with a gal out, the adjuster out in Indiana. So I would expect NIRMA's rep, they've already sent a letter to them. But officially we have to, I always like to make records in our minutes that we've done that. So again, I think it should be disposed of fairly quickly.
Vote. 7-0. Approve or disapprove agreement with Jerry Pigley of Woods and Aikens LLP to represent Gage County on case Paternal Order of Police Lodge number 45B versus Gage County, Nebraska Sheriff of Gage County and Gage County Board of Supervisors, case number 1385. And what this is, last meeting we approved Jerry to be our representative. We did not have the contract in place. He switched to law firms. That's what he did.
Right.
And since then, they've mailed a contract to us because of the fact that CIR case was on the 26th. We had to approve that last time. And then now we do have the official contract here to approve. So
that law firm just split up into about six or eight different law firms, and so it's just a matter of approval.
Yeah.
Saying that we want Jerry Pigsley representing here, and I would move to approve.
Second.
It is. It's the same rate. Don thinks it's the same rate as what we were paying before when he was with the other law firm, but law firm split up. So
he's just a little higher than I am.
He's just a little higher. Yeah, he's a little higher than you are, yeah.
No.
You can note that, too.
Do we have a bleeding heart on the agenda? I don't know.
To make it known that we are not chicken.
Yeah. And in the contract, as part of the contract, it says my billing rate is $275 an hour, just so everybody's aware of that.
Yours is?
Not my billing rate. Jerry Pigsley's, as a representative of this firm.
Myron wouldn't work for $275 an hour.
That's the chicken feed.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a chicken feed. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was too much.
We already have it.
Danny and Eric.
Oh, I didn't even hear it. Must have been all the comments here.
Vote. 7-0. The only thing I have left on the agenda, unless somebody else has something, we're going to go into closed session, and it'll be for possible negotiations for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of individuals.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, second by Byers to go into executive session.
10:44.
At 10:44. Thank you, Gary. I always forget that one. We will take about a 2-3 minute break here. Sorry.
Hold on, we got enough votes here yet?
You guys voting for it?
All right.
Yep. All right, Tech Hunt.
I'll talk to you in a minute, Galen. We're on record now.
Need a motion to come out of executive session at 11:13.
So move.
Second. Lytle, seconded by Byers. Vote. 6-0, Jurgens had to leave as soon as the executive session was done
Matt,
here.
And Matt.
And Matt Bauman, too. 5-0, sorry. Matt Bauman and Jurgens both stepped out as we ended the meeting due to time constraints. Anything else for the good of the call?
I had
meeting
some
adjourned.
For you, and I can't remember.
8:13. 11:13, not 8:13.